everyone, welcome to another edition of the Kaiju Kingdom Podcast. I am your host, Chris Eaton, and joining me today is a good friend. Sir, please introduce yourself to the good people.
Hi guys, my name is Helmy. Thanks Chris for having me. I'm a huge Godzilla fan. Me and Chris met a couple of years ago at G-Fest, and it's been a blast since. We've been hanging out a lot in America, in Japan. Uh-huh. We've hung out in Japan twice now. So I can't believe that's all happening. So it's been really fun. So thanks for having me.
Yes, just for those listening and those who might be watching on YouTube, I am still in Japan. I am currently in the great city of Yokohama. You have to excuse the weird lighting setup I got here. I'm in my hotel room. Actually, a very nice hotel room. Let me give a shout out to the good people at the Best Western of Shin Yokohama. This is the room for me. It's perfect size. It's not a closet. Which is, I bring that up because the reason I have Helmy on today is during the 3 weeks I've been here already, I've been seeing a lot of people, as I post online, go on about, oh man, you're lucky, oh, only if I could go, man, I really want to go, I'm going, and I thought, you know what, why don't we do an episode about heading to Japan, and I know no one better suited for that than Helmy, so I asked him to come on because this man is a stern professional at traveling, and man, he's got some mileage under his belt in this great country. For full disclosure, last year when we did the we're just going to sit down to do our recap, I brought up Helmy. This is the man I was talking about because without him, I would have been completely lost my first time out here. I would have not known where the hell to go, what to do. Helmy took me under his wing for, I think, 5 of the 8 days I was here. And I think I did more walking and I saw more things than I think I would have. I think I've actually done in the 3 weeks that I've been here. So I am happy as hell to have him on. So first off, Helmy, you're a Godzilla fan. Just for schnitz and giggles, if you will, when did it start for you? Because where are you out of right now?
I'm in Melbourne, Australia. But I'm originally from Singapore. And it all started because when I was young, growing up, I'll stay up really late watching wrestling and Godzilla with my granddad. I was very close to my granddad. And it's something we bonded over. And I just love the fact that, you know, there's this huge dinosaur-esque kind of monster destroying, you know, Tokyo. So that was fun for me. And I love dinosaurs. Growing up, I love dinosaurs. So Godzilla was a natural transition.
I think that I've talked about this with some of my female friends. With men, when you're a little boy, there's the four totems you choose from. It's usually planes. It's some sort of equipment. And I put both tractors and trains in this category. They kind of share the same thing. Cars or dinosaurs. And you pick one. You can like them all, but you usually pick one, and that is what you will base a lot of your personality on for the next 12 years of your life. And that will be the obsession. So dinosaurs, from a lot of people that I know and have been friends with, have been the cohesive string, if you will, there. So I think it's an unspoken bond. Like, you know, like, it's you just sense it. You're like, you're into dinosaurs, too. Yep. Because there's nothing cooler than dinosaurs. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. So I technically met Helmy online through our friends over at the Collect All Monsters show. And I say that because it was through the Facebook group first. So shout out to those guys, Kyle and all them out there. Great show. If you have not seen it, go check them out. And then we bumped into each other at G-Fest last year, was it not?
Yes, yes.
Yes. I think it was the last day we were down in the autograph. We were down in the autograph area. And all of a sudden I just hear, Chris? And I look, I'm like, Helmy? Like, I didn't even know you were there. I had no idea you showed up. And we got to talking. It was Sunday night. I think the show was wrapping up. Mm-hmm. And knowing that I know that you're from Australia, and that's why I was completely shocked to see you out in Chicago, because that's a long way from Australia. And yeah. I asked, like, hey, man, how long are you in town for? And he's like, oh, I'm flying back tomorrow. I'm like, oh, okay, where do you got to go? Oh, I fly from here to L.A. and then L.A. to Melbourne. I'm like, oh, that's cool. I'm like, how long are you in L.A.? I think your layover was something ridiculous, like 13 hours.
12 hours.
You told me 12 hours. And this is the next question. So you going to see anything? You're like, no, I'm just going to hang out at the airport. At that point, I said, no. I would not wish anybody hanging out for 12 hours at LAX. I'm my worst enemy. I've had to do it, and I live in the area. No, that place is the third level of hell. No. So you had never seen Los Angeles. I live in the area. I happened to be flying back. I think I landed an hour before you landed. So it all worked out. I landed in Orange County, got my car, went, picked you up, and then I think we did the Cliff Notes version of Los Angeles for about 8.5 hours, did we not?
Yep, pretty much.
Yep, and took you to all the great Godzilla toy stores out there, too. And still, like, you're like, oh, man, I spent so much. Still bought some more stuff. For those who don't know, Helmy has got one of the most impressive Godzilla collections and setups of any human being I've ever seen. His place, I've only seen pictures, but his place blows anything I've ever seen because the man has class and pizzazz about how he displays everything. He's got this awesome theater that he's shown me pictures and video of that is the ultimate man cave of all Godzilla things. And that's what, you know, that's what I'm like, I like this dude. This guy, this guy has it. He knows what's up. So there we go. So that's the origin. Oh, wait. What do you got? What do you got going?
Oh, no. Sorry. Is this that my AC turned off? I need to turn it on again.
Oh, okay. I had the opposite problem. It's about 48 degrees. I don't know what that is in Celsius. I think it's like 17 or something in Celsius out here in Yokohama right now. So even as a big guy, I am freezing my butt off. I've been freezing my butt off for the last couple of nights. So the matter of the fact of this episode, we're going to talk about coming out to Japan. And for those listening, Helmy is going to walk you through ways that you can come out, what to see, what to do. And one as a Godzilla fan and another as just to enjoy this beautiful country that is Japan. It is, I would argue, if there's any place in the world you want to visit, this should be at the top of your list. And I'm going to let Helmy turn that over. I'm going to turn it over to him. First things first. Helmy, I know a lot of people get frightened at the prospect of traveling internationally. Okay. You do it all the time, but you have your certain methods. But for those who are thinking, like, should I do this? Should they come to Japan?
1,000% yes. I mean, it's scary. Yeah, I get it. But I've been to Japan. Even my first time, I was by myself, I think, by myself for a few days.
Wow.
And here's the thing, right? My first time in Japan, they didn't have smartphones then. Right? So I literally printed out maps and to make my, you know, to find my way and stuff like that. So here's the thing. If I could do it with without a smartphone, right, with barely any Wi-Fi or whatever and stuff like that, and I could get by using maps and just translate and stuff like that, and asking people for help, people are super, super helpful. If I could do that as a student with really, really limited budget, my first time, I think anyone can go to Japan, honestly.
Very much so. I've been out, like I said, been here for 3 weeks. I've been on, I would say, a modest budget for myself. I brought 3,000 American, and I'm not even halfway through that. And that's just being, you know, conservative, if you will, with my spending. I know a lot of people think, oh man, it's going to be a lot. If you're not from America and you're traveling America, yeah, you're probably going to need a little more scratch. But Japan, not so much. And I found that, you can, I think the first time I came out here, I had 8 days and I had $800 and I came back with, I think 3,000 yen in my pocket. So, and that was, and Helmy saw, I bought a lot of stuff that time too. So let's talk travel. You are a man that travels quite a bit. My goodness. Can I give a rundown of what you did in July real quick?
July. I went to G-Fest. So that was amazing. I went to LA. I met up with you. Yeah. Hung out with you guys. You had fun. And then I went to Chicago for G-Fest, which is amazing again. And then after that, I went to Kentucky. I went to a really cool antique shop in the middle of nowhere in Kentucky to get some really cool sofubi. You would never imagine that. And then I went to, I went to the Colonel Sanders graveyard as well. Here's a pretty great, you know, fancy looking graveyard as well. And fun fact, there's a kaiju bar in Kentucky as well. So anyone nearby in Kentucky or you live in Kentucky, there's literally a kaiju bar to check out. Really cool stuff. And then after that, I went to Denver for my friend's bachelor's party. And after Denver, went back to LA, and then back to Melbourne for 2 days before going to Japan for Summer Wonder Festival. Oh, yeah, just a quick back, fun fact. Never ever go to Japan during summer. It is extremely painful. Only go if you have to, because it's very, very uncomfortable.
Yes, that is something. I've not experienced Japan yet in the summer, and as a big dude, I am avoiding it like the plague. My wonderful co-host, Jessica, has been out here in the summer, and she is as petite as it gets, and she even says, no, it's too much. It is absolutely murder. Our mutual friends out here who live out here year-round have said similar things. They're like, look, what would you say is the best time to come then?
Obviously around Godzilla birthday, November 3rd, right? Like,
yes.
Yeah. And then Winter Wonder Festival in early February. It's not too cold. I would say like you could get by with a jacket and really good weather. A perfect time to go would be March, April, because you can see cherry blossoms. And it's quite cool. You won't sweat too much. You can wear, most days you can just wear a t-shirt or maybe a light jacket. So I would say February when Wonder Festival is around, when they are fall, and which is October, November, and yeah, cherry blossom period, which is March, April. These are the best times to go. However, keep in mind, because this is the best times to go, you're going to have to compete with a lot of people. And so a lot of the sites that you want to go to, you probably need to go literally at the break of dawn, you know, like sometimes in order to beat the crowd, I literally would stay at the hotel next to the place that I really, really want to go to. So it's like, I don't have to compete with anyone. I'll go up super, super early and there'll be no one at all. And the change can be really, really drastic. Chris, this is one time I went to this really nice temple, right? I was there about 7 a.m. 7 a.m. Was pretty cool, pretty chill, right? Literally, by the time it hit close to 8 o'clock, I think it was at 7:45, holy shit. Like, that, even though it was a 45-minute window, damn, it was bad.
Yes, I actually sent you a picture about 2 weeks ago when I was in Shibuya, and I have never seen humanity. Again, I live in the greater Los Angeles area. I thought I've seen it all, but holy hell, like, Shibuya was insane. And this was a Monday night. It was a Monday night. That blew my mind. I seen the picture, and I think you told me, like, I've never seen Japan. This is probably the most crowded this last trip that you had seen it, possibly. And I think part of that has to do with the exchange rate. Being as low as it is right now. So if you're planning on coming in the next couple of months, might be the time to come if you really want to make that dollar stretch, which we'll get into in a second. So let's talk about flights. You know airlines. You know all that stuff. Just so people know, Melbourne to Japan is still not a quick jaunt. You guys might be on the same, I guess, latitude, if you will, but how long is the flight for you to Tokyo from Melbourne?
Technically, there's a direct flight. It's 10 and a half hours.
Oh, my God. That's my time back to Los Angeles. That's not coming here. The flight here is from Los Angeles to Tokyo is roughly 12 hours and like 30 minutes. And that is a sit. So let's tackle this and first, because you gave me some great recommendations last time you were out in LA, And I've been passing this along to people. So first things first, if you've never flown that long, how would one prep for that kind of flight? Especially, let's just say you're being fiscally conservative and you cannot get the super nice seats. So we'll just start at the bottom here. How do you prep for such a long trek?
Thankfully for me, I don't need to go to the toilet often, right? Mm-hmm. And I think for me, the best seat is always the window seat, right? Because mm-hmm. you get to lean against something. It feels like there's a bit more space and no one's going to disturb you about needing to go to the toilet, right? So like, if anything, you'll be the one needing to disturb someone if you want to go to the toilet. So for me, when I travel by economy, I always try to get a window seat because I tend to sleep better that way. And another way for me to be able to sleep is I get so much, I get myself really, really tired as much as possible, right? Mm-hmm. And I try to sleep a few hours less the night before. So when mm-hmm. I get on the plane, I knock out cold because you're mm-hmm. so tired, your body just shuts down. And mm-hmm. I've had that work like clockwork. I've not had an issue of, oh my God, I can't sleep. I it's always worked like a charm for me.
I've had the opposite, unfortunately, because you're much more fit than I am. You're very svelte. I'm a big dude. I think I've lost some weight out here walking around Japan. But even still, like, I'm still a big boy. So if you're of the, let's just say, more rotund, clientele, if you will, I would say yes. I would follow Helmy and say yes, the window seat is good. But for me, I need an aisle seat just because I'm 6'1", and, you know, I'm over 300 pounds. So I try when I travel to give the people next to me some space so that way I can lean out in the aisle a little bit. But that is personally for me. If you don't have that problem, go with Helmy's strategy.
I want to quickly say, if you have wide shoulders, like I have pretty wide shoulders, what happens is, like clockwork, every single time I see in the aisle seat, without fail, you know, when the cabin crew walks by, I get hit on the shoulder. I could be sleeping in it. Oh, every single time.
2 weeks before I came out here, I flew to Chicago. And we had a layover. I got to go straight there. So the flight out, aisle seat, my buddy booked it. That cart went up and down that four-hour flight about six times, and every single time my knee sticking out got railed, just jammed hard as it could. And this is not a knee that's I'm getting old, Helmy, so it's starting to give me some little bit of issues. So every time, and you know, the poor steward, you're working with, I think like 8 to 12 inches of space at times, like. So I understand, and you got to kind of tuck a little bit, but yeah, without missing a beat, that knee got hammered both to and fro. Thankfully, this trip over, I flew a company called Zip Air. They are economic, so they are fairly new. Someone described them as the Southwest Airlines of Japan. I think that's fairly apt. I've flown United and Zip out here. The Zip was fine. The seats were fairly roomy. They are very economy. So if, you don't expect any in-flight meals, and if you do, they're very, basic, if you will. You get some cup of noodles, a couple little things here and there. But, if you really want, I think the total cost of this flight was about $780 round trip. So ballpark, if we're talking financials in American USD, coming from LA to here, you're going to spend, I think, roughly between $650 to about $900 economy-wise. So that, would you say that the flight tends to be the biggest chunk of the cost of getting to Japan?
Yeah, for sure, 100%. keep in mind that sometimes it can vary by quite a lot. It can go a few thousands, even, you know, just for economy. But if you travel off peak, or if you travel, if you book your tickets way in advance, or if you choose, you know, weird timings or pairings and stuff like that, you can bring the cost down. I've heard of people, because they'll be, you know, wanting to save a buck, they travel indirect routes and stuff like that. So it takes longer, but I've heard it go down as cheap as $450, you know, which is like, to go to Japan, $450, that's not a lot. So I would say definitely use Google flight, you know, like they have this feature where you can track the flight prices and stuff like that. I would definitely use that. And my personal advice is, on generally airlines, they like to make changes 6 months out or 90 days out. So, you know, the price may vary a lot during the during those periods. But don't aim for the cheapest price all the time, right? Because it might not go down that cheap. Sometimes, you know, Google will show, oh, sometimes it's been cheaper and stuff like that. But I would say if it's generally a really good price, just jump on it. It's better than stressing, like, you know, because I had friends who were like, oh, no, I've seen it go lower. I'm like, yeah, there's a chance it might go lower, but it's a really good price now. Get it now.
Yes, that is actually excellent advice. Just traveling domestic in the United States, I've run into that where, I mean, booking my flight to G-Fest, I booked it 3 weeks out. And, you know, in 4 days when I checked before I got paid, it jumped up like $175. So, that shows you, if you're plotting this out, tell me realistically, what would you tell a first timer, a time frame to really plot out just the travel portion of your trip, how far in advance?
Okay. I would definitely plan at least 6 months out, the bare minimum. And the thing about going to Japan, I really, really wouldn't stress about, like, oh, I got to make this trip the best trip ever, because I guarantee you, this will not be your one and only Japan trip. Every single person who's been to Japan, or especially as a kaiju fan, will know this. They will go back. I guarantee you. Even people I know are like, oh, I don't want to travel. You know, I just love my country. I'm not going to leave. I go to Japan once, and that's it. I was shocked that we went back to Japan again within a year. So trust me when I say this. Don't stress about, like, oh, I got to cover everything in this first trip. Just do, like, what you really feel like doing. Just see what you really want to see in your first trip. And then it will work itself out in the next few trips. I promise you.
This is something he told me. Helmy told me on the last trip, on our last day, he's like, dude, when you plan your next one? I'm like, I don't know. I'll see when that comes through. And, you know, lo and behold, this came up, and I have the time right now. So when that first trip, I had 8 days. And that's not accounting, if you're coming from America, you lose a day coming over here. So you jump ahead. And when you come back, you gain a day. So if you I had 8 days, so technically I had about seven days to myself to really do things. And again, thanks to Helmy, like, shoved in so much. And that was just within the immediate Tokyo area. Something we'll jump into in a minute. But I went as far as where I'm staying now in Yokohama, because one of the big things was I got to see that Gundam last year. I had to see that Gundam. That was on my plan. Thankfully, my friend Jessica went and saw it earlier and warned me, make sure you go on the weekend, because they're going to be closed the rest of the week. I had planned to make it like the last part of my trip. Oh, no. Things had to change around. But I'm glad I did, because once I was on that plane back, after talking to Helmy, he's like, dude, you're going to come back. I know you're going to come back. And this whole last year, I'm like, I'm definitely coming back. But that 8 days was not enough, and I wanted to see so much more. I have friends that live in Osaka. I wanted to see Osaka. And much like last time, I had a warped view of how small this country is, and it's really not as small as I thought it was. And it turns out, yes, trying to see everything you want in those 8-9 days is not as possible. You get a little overambitious. And even in the 33 days I'm here, I found myself biting off more than I can chew at times. I mean, Look, I just spent the last 8.5 days in Osaka. I went to Kyoto, and I told you, hey, I'm going to do Fukuoka for a day. And your reaction was, really? Like, everyone I told, they're like, you're going to Fukuoka. I'm like, yeah, I want to see Fukuoka. I want to see southern Japan. I want to go as far south as I could. And there was a part of me that was like, if I can get to Fukuoka, maybe there's this artist I love. His family has a sweet shop like an hour south. Maybe I can get there. Oh, no, turns out once I was there, oh, no, Fukuoka is not like the rest of Japan. Tokyo is its own thing. Would you say that's correct?
Yeah, once you go out to the sticks, it's a bit harder to get around, right?
Mm-hmm.
And everything else is not as English friendly, or public transport is not as easy to find.
Very much so.
The train times won't be as frequent and stuff like that. And having to navigate Japan on a bus is not easy, which is why most tourists do not use the bus, because it's quite daunting.
It is.
But you can get used to it. You can get used to it. I did. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I ran into this. Thankfully, I because of our tight-knit group, we have a friend that lives down in the Fukuoka area, Frank. Shout out to Frank. He heard me talking about it. He's like, dude, come on down. I'll show you around. And turns out, yes, Fukuoka is a very car-centric area, much like Los Angeles is. And he had a car, so he got me around and got me the whirlwind tour, much like Helmy did last time. And I got to see quite a bit. As he was pointing out, he's like, yeah, there's like 5 train lines down here. And even if you get off, you're going to have to hike to everything you need to do. Like, the big thing we wanted to do was, there's the Scarecrow Godzilla that's currently up on this farm right outside Fukuoka, and it was still like a 30-minute trip outside the city.
Wow. And
yes, I was, before Frank had offered that, I'm like, I'll get out there, I'll figure out a way. Oh no, I would have had to have taken a taxi. And then here's the thing, once I got the taxi out there, good luck getting a taxi back, because that was going to be the other problem. And on top of that, I would have spent a small fortune just to see this, you know, 18-foot Scarecrow Godzilla. Thank God for Frank, because he's like, I want to see that thing too, so we're going. And, you know, now that, Helmy, that you've experienced some of the rural areas of America, when we were, you know, and Frank is from America too. When we were going through this, we were like, oh, this feels like southern Missouri, like where my family's from. I'm like, this is the boons, and this is where this Godzilla was. I'm like, yeah, there's no way in hell without a car we were getting out here. So depending on the areas, like Osaka, a very train-friendly city, Kyoto, same thing. But I found with Kyoto, I had to do a little more walking than I would have had to do in Tokyo. But they're not as big of cities, so you can really get around. Yeah, that was my goal this time around. Like, I have a month, seeing as much as I can. Now, realistically, most people, you're going to have 9 to 10 days. My friends that came and joined me on the first leg of the trip after the Godzilla stuff, they had 10 days, which meant they had about 7 solid days of doing things, because you got to take in the big thing that people don't, if you've never traveled internationally, time change. I've never been one for jet lag, and this traveling out here twice now has gotten to me. The first time I was so bonkers out of my mind that I'm not going to lie, I had a panic attack in my teeny tiny hotel room at like 1 a.m, and I had to get out and get some air. So a big thing I would recommend is definitely try your best. Once you come in, give yourself a day to rest and readjust. You know, even the youngest person that I've talked to that's done this, they're like, yeah, that first day is a lot. And it takes a little bit to readjust, especially if you're flying and the sun never leaves your plane. That's kind of messed up in a weird way. So those are little things I would say. But for the first timer, most likely you're going to go to Tokyo. Let's go into accommodations in Tokyo for the modestly budgeted traveler for the first time. Tell me, What are your recommendations for people out here if they're coming for the first time? They want to see Tokyo, and, you know, let's just say you're coming with a couple of friends. A lot of people, okay, especially in America, they would say, oh, we'll just split a room. What would you say to that?
Okay, here's the thing, right? There's a variety of options when it comes to, like, wanting to stay in Tokyo and stuff. So you have, if you're on a really, really tight budget, like crazy tight, you can still do hostels, right? There's hostels which I've literally stayed in hostels as cheap as, I guess, in American dollars, maybe $18 a night, you know?
That's about what I've seen when I was booking, yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to really live places like that because it's not the most comfortable, and obviously you need to share the facilities and stuff like that. But I would say if you can book an APA in advance, because trust me, if you don't book in advance, I've seen APA go up as high as $300. Literally. I'm never paying $300 for an APA because it's supposed to be a budget hotel. So this is why I stress that it's important to book your rooms much in advance. But generally, I've gotten by with, on average, I try to spend about $50 to $60 a night. And this is because I'm booking in advance and I kind of know where to book and stuff like that. Ideally, you want to book a place which is near to the places you want to visit all the time. I tend to book in Akihabara because I tend to check out a lot of stuff in Akihabara. And if you book in advance over there, it can be $50, $60. Shinjuku, it's a bit more expensive. Expect it to be $80, $90 if you book in advance. But again, this is like really good prices. On average, expect to pay maybe $120 a night on the lower end. But yeah, just do your research and just book in advance is the best advice I can give.
Now, for the other thing, for people who are traveling in groups, they might think, hey, we'll split the cost. What do they need to know about the budget Japanese hotels?
Okay, so okay, first thing first is the rooms are very small, right? Mm-hmm. Very small, very tight. You might be able to squeeze two people in a room. Ideally, you won't want to get a single bed each. And keep in mind, right? I know in certain places in the world that I visited, the room price is fixed. For example, there could be 10 people coming into that room. It still is going to be $100, right? But in Japan, it's different. It really goes by the number of people in your booking. So if you book a room and there's an additional person, then they're going to charge a little bit extra. So instead of $100, it would be like $115 or something like that. So keep in mind that. So when you're doing your budgeting and you look, and you're checking the prices, make sure that you know you came into account that there may be additional charges like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, most people are going to want to stay in Tokyo. And that's probably for the first time. I would say yes. Spend your whole just plot your first time around in Tokyo. If you got about, let's just say on average 10 days to a week. Would you say there's more than enough stuff to do in those 10 days in Tokyo?
100%, 100%. Okay, a couple of things. I mean, there's so many places I can list. For example, you want to check out Akihabara. If you really want to go into depth. In Akihabara, check out every single shop, take your own sweet time, see everything that you need to see. Literally, my first time where I wanted to splurge my time in Akihabara, I spent 4 whole days trying to find everything that I wanted to find. So 4 days in Akihabara alone. So that's definitely possible. I wouldn't recommend it because it's a lot to spend in one area. Then you can go to Shinjuku. There's so many things to see in Shinjuku. And then obviously you have Saitama, where you have your Godzilla ride, which is amazing, which is a must visit place. And then, obviously, you have Tokyo itself. You should check out the city. Shibuya, there's a Mandarake there, which is really cool. It's in the basement and stuff. And I found some really good goodies there as well. And obviously, in Shibuya, you have your Tower Records, 7 floors. It's epic. There's so many things to see. You have your... Akita dog? What's the name? Hachiko, right? Hachiko, which is really famous. But this is a deep cut, right? If you want to see something a bit more happier, you can see, I think it was Tokyo University, but you have to check this out. At one of the universities in Tokyo, you get to see a statue of Hachiko jumping up towards its owner. So it's kind of like, oh, they're being reunited in the afterlife. So that's a really nice statue you can go and visit. It's a really nice campus for you to walk around. There's really, really nice gardens as well. So again, so many things to see and do. I'll be honest, 10 days in Tokyo itself, 100%. And you won't finish. Well,
yo, no, you won't. You definitely will not. Let's really go over for the, because this is a Godzilla based show. Helmy, like I said, was integral to getting me to some of those great Godzilla places. What are some of the must-see places in Tokyo, just Tokyo proper, that you can get by via train for the Godzilla-minded? What would you say is the first thing that people would need to go see?
Thanks. Okay. The thing that is on a timed, I don't know how long it's going to go for, but obviously the Godzilla, you know, the light show, the mapping on the building. Gotta go for that.
That's on the weekend. Yeah, that's on the weekends right now. I got to see it 2 weeks ago, which it's amazing. And there is a website that you can check for the schedules. Remember, it is Saturday and Sunday. They don't count the weekend out here as Friday, Saturday, and Sunday like in America. So Saturday and Sunday at sundown. And the sun goes down very early out here during the fall. It's about 4:15. It's dark already. Like, it is. So make note of that. Just know that if you want the daylight to do a lot of things, you're going to have to get up early and often to really hit that stuff. Because once about 3:30, it starts getting settled into dusk. And then 4 o'clock, the lights are on. I believe at the Shinjuku Metropolitan Building, that show starts around 5:30 and runs till about 10 o'clock. I did manage to pick the one show when I showed up at 8 o'clock that didn't show the Godzilla event. So I had to wait another 15 minutes to run around. But that said, amazing to see. It's absolutely free. You go, it's the two buildings where Godzilla and King Ghidorah, or Mecha King Ghidorah fought. And they project this, like, it's this insane video on this entire building. And there is, it's part of a whole show. So I think the show lasts about 15 minutes in total. The Godzilla portion, I think, is like 8 minutes long. And it's awesome because sitting there, Helmy, doesn't it feel like if our boy was real, this is the closest? Yes. Yeah. This is the closest you're getting.
I was so pumped because it literally, I got chills because it felt like this is like, if Godzilla was real, this is how it's going to be like. It really felt like that.
Yeah, he fights the Super X, and then this coming weekend, as of this recording, they're starting a second show. They're calling, I think it's called Generations, and the tease shows about 10 different Godzillas. I have no idea what they're doing, but it starts Saturday, and you bet your sweet ass I am there, front row center, waiting for that thing to show up. So my buddy from San Diego's coming in, and we already got that booked out. They're like, we're going to be there, front row. We're going to see this thing. So, yes. And that, like I said, it is free. So you don't have to spend any money other than getting to that station. Now, what else? If you're in Shinjuku, what else is there to do Godzilla-wise?
Shinjuku, if you're in Shinjuku, then, you know, you got to check out the Godzilla Hotel. And ideally, stay at the Godzilla room or the Godzilla View rooms. So those rooms are available to... you have to find the specific website because if you just go to Hotel Gracery, you won't find those rooms. I think there's a specific link you need to use to find those rooms. And keep in mind, those rooms are very, very expensive, especially if you book like last minute or on weekends or on special days. It can the Godzilla room can cost up to, the highest I've ever seen was $2,000, right?
Yes.
Which is a lot. The most I've paid for the room, this was a splurge, and my girlfriend was willing to help me out. So my third time being in that room, we paid $1,000, so which is a lot.
Okay. For one night. Yes, and that was for one night. How big is that room, by the way?
It's big. It's I would say it is the biggest room I've stayed in Japan. which is not saying a lot because all the rooms are small, but it is really big and spacious. I had a party with quite a few people. I think we had like 10 people in and still felt very comfortable. I would say a pretty big room. The Godzilla view room, no, that's very small. But you get to see Godzilla outside, which is pretty cool.
And that's the room with the foot, right?
No, the head.
No, no, okay, yeah, that's the view room. So when you look out, you get to see Godzilla's head. But the main room that you were in was the one with the foot, right?
His paw.
His paw, okay. So, yes. Yeah. I think the Godzilla website, the English version, does have a link to that, because I did, in my lesser moment, contemplate a night, and one, they were nearly booked for the entire month of November. And two, I think the one night it was open, which was a Thursday, it was $1,400 for the night. And I just couldn't justify that cost right now. But if you get, I would say with Helmy, if you get the chance, go see it. Speaking of the head.
Yes.
The head is a definite see. It does go off at.
You can't visit it, unfortunately, right now, because there's been more than one instance of someone trying to jump off that level. So they've kind of closed off the area for now until they increase the security or something like that. But the cool thing is, just keep in mind that there is a cafe on that level. And on that level, they have, Godzilla themed drinks and food for now. And there's a small Godzilla diorama at the cafe itself.
So when you walk in, you can go upstairs. It's at the Hotel Gracery, downtown Shinjuku. You go up to, like, I think it's like the 8th floor, which doesn't even start the hotel because the rest is an office building. And, yeah, you walk in, there's the check-in, and then there's, like, this little kind of waiting area off to the side, but then there's a cafe and there's the head. You can still see the head up close, but you're going to see it through a glass pane. But if you go into the cafe right now, my buddy's, we already got a plan to go get some Godzilla lattes. And then there's the big, I think it's actually the Kyoto big boy, your big guy that you got.
Yes, 89,
Yep. So he adorns the opening of the cafe. I actually got to have a drink in there last year, briefly, because there was no one in there. And they're like, yeah, just come on in. But there, last time I was there about 3 weeks ago, it was very busy. Now, to be fair, it was the Godzilla 70th, so everybody and their brother was visiting it. But that is definitely something to see. They have a little store, but that's not the store you want to go to. Where do you want to go, Helmy?
Well, in Shinjuku itself, there is the actual Godzilla store. Really cool store. Has a ton of stuff. You can buy a ton of merch. I'll be honest, some of it's kind of useless merch, but it's fun anyway. So I think it was there where I bought Godzilla ear tips, you know, the stuff that you use.
Q-tips.
So you would never think that you have Godzilla ear tips. They have Godzilla coffee, they have energy drink, wafers, tons of stuff there. It's a bit of a walk from the hotel itself. I think it's like 10-minute walk.
About 12 minutes. Yeah. It's worth it, though.
Before the store itself, there is the donkey, which is at... on the way there, that donkey has a couple of Godzilla goodies as well and stuff you can check out.
Hold on. For those the uninitiated, what is donkey? Because that's the shorthand out here.
Don Quixote is a massive store which sells a ton of stuff, like from clothing to luggage to food to merch to everything. It's normally a few levels high, and each level has something different for you to buy. And you claim your tax. Yeah, you can also claim your tax. So whatever prices you see are just minus 10% when you get your tax refund.
Let's pause on that for a second, because this is something that I found a lot of people don't know when they travel to Japan. Explain the tax incentive out here.
A couple places. How to put this? Not everywhere you go would allow you to get a tax refund. Right? Some places they'd be like you. The annoying thing is, some places you go, they list a price, 5,000 yen, right? But that's not inclusive of tax, so you need to pay another 500 yen. So it's 5,500 yen. So be prepared with that, because there's certain shops, especially in Nakano, I've been hit by that before. I was like, oh, I see it's 5,000. I'm going to buy it. And it's like, oh, no, then you got to pay tax. And more often than not, shops that do that, you can't claim that tax back. And even shops that you can claim your tax, you need to spend at least 5,500 yen. So mm-hmm. when you do, you get your 500 yen back. So that's the thing about GST in Japan.
So the way that works out here is that a lot of, especially if you're in the greater Tokyo area, they'll have these huge signs that say tax-free or duty-free. It's essentially duty-free. So you go in, you make your purchases. Like Helmy said, there are thresholds that you need to meet. Some places I found just didn't care. I went to Toys R Us at Sunshine City, and they didn't care. But I didn't claim it because I just bought a tiny little Takara Tomy thing that was like 800 yen. I'm like, I'm not wasting my time getting the 60 yen back on this. Some places, if you pay with your credit card, I have found will take the tax right off. Or the like Mandarake, which we'll get into in a second, you get a receipt and you get a secondary receipt and you go to a claims counter on either another section of the floor or in the back of the store, and then they will process it and give you back the money, essentially the tax money. So you'll pay the tax first, then go get it back. If you're out here buying big things, it is well worth it. I found if it's tiny little things under 1,000 yen, it's really not worth it. You know, it does take up a little time because, you know, there's a lot of people doing the same thing. So these are things to expect when you come here. In that same building where the Godzilla store is, for us collector savvy people, there's two other things in that department store, which the department stores out here are wild. They're absolutely wild to see. They're nothing like American department stores. So Helmy got me hip to this the first time, and I've already made several visits to this place. What is on, I think it's the fifth floor. What's up there?
Are you talking about the Prime Wine display?
I am.
Yeah. So on that level, you have a really cool, epic Prime Wine display where they always change out the statues they have on display. So you get to see some really cool statues like Terminator, Alien, Predator, Ultraman and stuff like that. It's really cool, and it's free for you to have a look and see and stuff like that. Resident Evil, there's quite a few Resident Evil statues there as well.
Oh man, they had an awesome Claire and Leon piece. Now these things, if you've ever seen Prime One in America, it's sold through Sideshow. These are not cheap pieces at all. I think Helmy, you got a couple of them, don't you?
Yeah, they're not cheap, unfortunately.
Yeah. Now, I do believe that Prime One sword does offer the tax incentive, so if you're buying it, you can save a little cash, but then comes the question of how in the hell do I get this home?
Shipping.
So,
It is huge. The boxes, oh my God.
Yeah, so you whatever you might save on tax, you might end up paying on shipping back. So, that is... So, I'm trying to think, is there any other, like, big Godzilla official things in the greater Tokyo area like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all right. So, so you have your, obviously, I really mentioned about the Saitama. Mm-hmm. The ride, this, Godzilla ride.
The Sea of Bin Park. Yep.
Sea of Bin Park. That, and then you have your Ultraman, the two Kaiju Sakabas. Right?
Yes. Tell the people about Kaiju Sakaba.
Kaiju Sakaba, two really cool Ultraman themed bars. There's two of them. One of it is in Kawasaki. It's about 45 minutes out, I think. And the other one is in Shinbashi, if I remember correctly. The one in Shinbashi is a bit smaller. There's not as much fun things to see, but I would still highly recommend having a quick visit. And the one in Kawasaki is the one you really, really want to visit. It's so much detail. There's a lot of Easter eggs. There's a lot of smaller rooms you can check out and stuff like that. And a lot of artwork, a lot of figures. And they have all these screens playing all the random Ultraman clips and stuff like that. And a quick Easter egg, if you go towards one of the back rooms, one of the rooms will be locked, right? And if you look into this room, you see two aliens talking to each other. And here's the thing, here's the trick. If you try to rattle the door handle, the person inside will be like, hey, get lost, get out. What the heck are you doing? Stop disturbing us. So that's a small Easter egg as well. And, oh, just one more quick thing. If you go there in your birthday month, make sure you let them know, hey, it's my birthday month, because then they will get someone. You get to do a photo op. They have this special room for photo ops with another alien that you can only take during your birthday month. So unfortunately for me, it's in January. I've never really visited Japan in January, so I don't think I'll be able to go into that special room. But if you do, yeah.
Last time your girlfriend got to go in, though.
Yeah, but that's because it was her birthday month. Yeah.
Yeah, so she got the picture with Zetton. Now, I posted a couple of pictures, and people were like, where the hell is this place? And to be fair, I got lost the first time. If you go to Kawasaki, Kawasaki is the next city out of Tokyo. It's a beautiful place. I would highly recommend. It's about a 40-minute train ride, but it's a fairly straight shot, depending on where you're coming from. But the thing is, and we'll talk about this in a second, about navigating this place, it is downstairs across from the Kawasaki station. The first time I went, meeting Helmy and a couple of other friends, I spent 25 minutes walking around in a circle. Like, where the hell is this place? Because the key thing that you use out here is this device. Google, I would say, is your friend. Is that Google Maps is your friend out here, right?
Yes. It's very, very important.
And it can also be your worst enemy at the same time. This is something that we'll jump into right now. If you're coming out from another country, unless your phone service is providing some sort of international coverage, you're going to lose your signal. So there are several methods on which people can receive a cell phone signal of sorts out here. And the big one, would you say that at least the best option is to maybe go with the Wi-Fi generator?
Here's the thing. For me, I've always bought an eSIM, right, in Japan.
Okay.
You can just buy an eSIM. That's why I do. But the thing is about Japan, because it's so condensed and stuff like that. What happened to Chris was, I'm not surprised that he got lost, was because it's hard to see on the map where you're at. And in fact, even in the directions and stuff like that, which is why Kyle Young literally has a compass for him to use to navigate sometimes, because it's hard to tell on your phone. But yeah, I would say having eSIM on your phone. Oh, another quick tip. Download all the maps offline, because in Google, you can download all the maps offline. So even if there's anything wrong with your signal and stuff like that, you can still use the offline maps to find your way.
So, for those, how much is an eSIM? let's just say about 10 days.
Oh, it's 10 days? I'm cheap. Yeah. Right? I'll go for the cheapest one. And so far, it's worked fine for me. I've not had an issue. I'm on Android, though, so I don't know about Apple, but for me on Android, I've had no issues. Mm-hmm. I would say it can get as cheap as, I think the cheapest I've paid was $15.
Okay. I've gone this route mainly because I'm doing a lot of posting while I'm out here. So Japan Wireless provides these. I think for the entire month I spend about $100. And it gets me about, I think, 8 gig a day of download. So it's been well worth the price. Those are things you need to consider and budget before you even get here. And those are something. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I was just going to say, keep in mind, regardless if they say it's unlimited data, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have this thing called responsible usage thing, right? Mm-hmm. Even though it's unlimited. So I got caught out the first time this happened. So I was trying to upload a ton of videos, a ton of photos without Wi-Fi. I was just using, obviously, my data. And it kept the service company, I think it was Doko, kept my internet for the next day or two, because I was like using too much. So keep in mind, you were planning to do a lot of content streaming and stuff like that. Just because they say it's unlimited does not mean you can go crazy.
There's always fine print. On that same note, if you're going to do that, the beauty about Tokyo especially is that there's free Wi-Fi all over the place. Your rooms will tend to have, every hotel I've been to has had free Wi-Fi as part of the package. The one place that you, if you are on the street and your phone stops working, but your Wi-Fi will work, where can people just walk into and use Wi-Fi wherever they need to?
I've always, the fast food restaurants for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Macca's and KFC. What are you thinking of? You seem to have
7-Eleven. 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 An American Institute. It's giant out here. People have heard the stories, and they are amazing. And, yes, so if you're in a jam, 7-Eleven will bail you out big time. They are nothing like the American ones. These are tightly run ships out here, and they are fantastic. Also, I believe the Lawson's and Family Mart's have them, but 7-Eleven, just find a 7-Eleven if you are in a jam. I think you can also get, they have money exchange places out there too. At most of the locations I've seen in Tokyo. If you get into the boons, yeah, then you're going to run into some issues. So, on the collector side, help me. So, you're out here, you want to see some stuff, but now you want to bring some stuff home with you. Where can people go pick up some awesome Godzilla stuff? Some stuff that you go to the Godzilla store, the Shinjuku one. It's got some cool stuff, but no, you want to come home with like a primo figure, something that store is not going to have. Where can people go?
That's easy. What you want to do is head over to Akihabara, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the stops, obviously, not the only stop. Akihabara, there's a Mandarake. What you want to go to is the Mandarake, I cannot pronounce that word. I have trouble pronouncing it, Kroko.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the same stretch as the Tamahashi Nations.
Yes. It's literally exhibit. The Tamahashi Nation store. When you walk out of the Akihabara station, it is the first thing you see. Mm-hmm. And then you cross a street and you'll be under the train track.
Yep.
Turn right like about half a block and you'll come into this little, best way to describe it is a little strip mall. It's like the cleanest strip mall you've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And you go in, and then there it is. And this particular location mm-hmm. caters to all things kaiju
mm-hmm.
and tokusatsu. So if that is your goal, this is the location. There are other mandarakes all over the place, mm-hmm. but this is the one to come to. Mm-hmm. And thanks to Helmy, I didn't know that. And when he brought me, I'm like, oh, sweet Jesus, there is so much here.
Yeah, and the second spot you should visit, mm-hmm. there's a couple of smaller stuff in the Mandarake in Akihabara. The one that's 7 stories tall or something like that. There's still some mm-hmm. hidden goodies in there, but not that much. You want to do is go to Nakano Broadway, and this is an amazing place, which is 3 levels that you should mainly be checking out, or maybe 4. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of kaiju stuff. You literally would take hours to go through every single level and go through every single thing in detail. And there's a lot of hidden goodies, Sofubi, X+, everything realistic, toys and stuff that you can find at Nakano Broadway. And a lot of it is even vintage stuff as well.
Yes. And the thing, like the first time Helmy took me there, we spent like 4.5 hours in there because there are so many nooks and crannies. Because this type of set up these broadways, these malls out here that are they're kind of like a hybrid of open air, closed air ones. I found there's a lot of them in Osaka too. They are all like small. It's one big building that has small individual stores in each of them. So you might go to a Mandarake that has nothing but manga, and across the way, there's a guy just dealing in nothing but, let's just say, vintage toy cars. And across from him is another person that just has a hodgepodge of things. You'll just see figures and books and stuff, and you just got to go look in. Some of these stores are tiny. They are tiny. Like, There's like one store, like, I am not going in there. Because I'm just going to, it's going to be like a bowl in a china shop. I'm just going to knock everything over. But there are hidden gems in all these places. So Nakano, definitely, if you're going to come out to come buy things, make this a half-day event. The thing is, when you walk in, you have to walk about maybe like about half a football field before you actually get to like the section where the Mandarakes are. And there's the escalator. Don't go to the escalator first, right?
Yeah. There's this one, I went to enter, like, not that far, maybe 50 meters in, and then because you want to go out and check out all the good stuff, because all the good stuff are on the high levels and stuff there. The escalator brings you all the way up to level 3, and you would think, oh, that's level 2, and you miss out on a whole level of really good stuff. So, once you see the escalator, don't go up, right? Almost right next to it, there's a staircase for you to go up to level 2, and then what you do is, you work your way up, and then, yes, work your way down again.
Yeah. So, and I know you're going to be doing a lot of walking. So for the first timers, what would you tell people if you're planning a trip out here, let's just say 10 days, and it's your first time, physically, what are you going to need to do to prep for this?
Well, besides being as fit as you can be, I guess, maybe, exercise a bit more, do a bit more steps before your trip. I cannot recommend this enough. Buy yourself a pair of good shoes. I guarantee freaking to you, $150 may seem a lot for a pair of shoes, but the difference I've had, I've been to Japan a lot, right? And in a lot of my trips, I've battle tested a variety of shoes. And every single time, I go back to, the one that's a bit more pricey and it gives you a bit more support in your shoes. For example, based on my experience, when I've ever had to wear sneakers, I've worn sneakers. Do not wear sneakers. Sneakers is the last thing you should be wearing when you're walking around in Japan. So I've tried sneakers. I tried a pair of shoes that's $10. I've went to Kmart and bought shoes that's like $15-$20. And I've gone up to shoes that's up to $200. You don't need to spend $200 on a pair of shoes. But I guarantee you the difference was when I was wearing sneakers or shoes that were pretty cheap, I could go maybe 10,000 steps and I would start to hurt quite a bit. Right, 10,000 steps. And when I go to a better shoe, a more expensive shoe, I guarantee to you, the amount of pain that I had at 10,000 steps, I was able to stretch it out to about 30,000. That's a big difference from 10,000 to 30,000. And I guarantee you, when you're in Japan, you're easily hitting 20,000+ steps a day. Easy.
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah. First time I learned this the hard way, especially this trip, it took me about 10 days to fully adapt to the amount of walking you have to do, which is something that I don't think a lot of people are prepared for. It's not just walking to your destination. There are stairs. There are stairs galore here. So, friends out here have recommended at least a month ahead something to do. Just start walking every night. Walk maybe, start at like a half mile, then maybe do a mile every night. Get yourself prepped and ready because it will make a world of difference. And if you're out of shape like me, start 2 months ahead of time. And I'm not being facetious. Seriously, it will be a world of difference because if you think, hey, I don't walk as much, I can do it. No, halfway through the day, your feet are murdering you. Your heels are just sore and swollen. Your knees are just shot. And another thing I would say to people, load up on water. For the love of God, have water on you. Now, there's 1,000,005 vending machines out here, so there's plenty of water. But here's the thing I also discovered with Japan is that because a lot of things are in Japanese, you'll see stuff like this. And you're like, oh, that looks like water. No, this is like their version of Gatorade. I found that out the hard way the first time. I have developed a taste for it. But just use your Google Lens and translate because this is not what you're expecting when you're dehydrated. You're like, it's like drinking a very watered down Gatorade at first, and it's a little off-putting, but after a while, you develop a taste for it.
I like it.
I love it too. I've drank so much of it while I'm out here. As you're traveling, so a good pair of shoes, if you're in America, my friends have recommended New Balance, something mm-hmm. that's going to give some good arch support. Buy a pair of insoles just to be on the safe side. The Dr. Scholl's one, I would recommend. They're fairly cheap. And make sure those shoes are broken in before you do not start with brand new shoes, ever. That is a rookie mistake, and you will pay dearly for it. Now, for actually traveling around.
Oh, sorry. I just remember one more thing. Mm-hmm. Shoes. I'm a cheapskate. I don't like spending money on shoes, right?
Neither do I. Yeah.
So I found one pair of a brand that I was like, I swear by right now. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's called Hoka. H-O-K-A, mm-hmm. right? If I remember mm-hmm. correctly. I tried my first pair for the first time the other day because there was a sale, right? Mm-hmm. It was 60% off. I was like, shit, 60% off? And it's white in color. I don't like white shoes, but at 60% mm-hmm. off, I like it. And mm-hmm. it was still really expensive. I think I paid about $100 after 60% off. Anyways, I wore it and I was like, holy shit, this was a game changer. And even though I'm a cheapskate, literally the next day I bought a second pair. I tried to find another pair because I knew I was going to wear it out and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And I wanted to balance between two pairs. So the next day, as a cheapskate, I bought the second pair. So I would highly recommend Hoka. And another thing I want to mention as well, bring a ton of painkillers because your feet is going to hurt. No matter what pair of shoes you use, it's still going to hurt.
Yes. So here's the thing out here. I found that coming from the American side, I can't speak for the Australian side, but the painkiller game out here is nowhere near as potent as what we're used to in America. I think you had a reaction to American painkillers. Like the rest of the world isn't on the steroid level that we are. So, I last time brought a bottle of Aleve. Some people would say, just bring the travel pack. No, just splurge for the bottle. I've had no problem with customs on that stuff. If you bring like 8 bottles, like 24 to 50, they're cool with that. Tylenol extra strength I have found works just as well. And if you can't do a leave like that, don't use aspirin. You need some sort of thing that's going to bring down swelling and muscle aches. Those are the big ones. And that is a must. Bring those from wherever you're coming from, because some of the things they offer out here, nowhere near the potency, or it's trying to figure out what's what, because everything is in Japanese. So I've had to ask friends about certain things of picking up out here that I've had to go hunting down. They've recommended certain things. That's been helpful. But if you don't have people out here in the know, come prepared. That is the biggest thing I would say. Allergy medication. Allergies are a big thing out here. This is a very lush area, including Tokyo. I'm an allergy guy, so I always bring Zyrtec with me. You will need that. If you come in the, I think especially during the cherry blossoms, people have told me, yeah, they're just a snotty mess. So have any of that stuff that you need. Benadryl is a big one that I found for this trip. Especially if you're having some problem trying to get some sleep, a little Benadryl goes a long way. It's fairly safe for everyone to use, but they don't sell Benadryl. I hear there's a version of it, but everyone I've talked to, they're like, it's nowhere near as potent as you need on the American side. So thankfully, I had some friends that travel with just boxes of this stuff because one of them has a Russian roulette allergic reaction. So before he left, he's like, gave me a box. He's like, here. And that helps with sleep. It helps with a lot of other things because, again, the time change the first couple of days will really screw with you. I've not met – I think Helmy's the only one that the time change doesn't really bother him too much. To be fair, you're kind of on the same level. I think you're only, what, 2 hours ahead of me right now? Okay. So it's not as big of a jump as the 8 to 10 hours that it is for me. Like, I think it's 1 in the morning in America right now. It's 7 p.m. out here. So something for that. Have all this stuff lined up in your travel bag. Tell me, how important is a travel bag out here?
Yeah, you should definitely have a travel bag. they have, I mean, if you forget to bring one and stuff like that, in Japan, there's tons. They sell travel bags like crazy because you would want to have a bag across you that has all the stuff that you need inside. You would ideally keep your wallet in there, your card for your train, your power bank. You need a power bank, a good power bank.
Yes.
Your cables, for some of them, I would recommend having a hand towel as well, because there's no, a lot of places they don't have blowers and all that, so you need to use hand towel to dry your hands. And yeah, basically a day bag is very, very important. And that's where you want to keep sometimes your rubbish, because if you've never been to Japan, there's very, very few rubbish bins around for you to throw your rubbish in. So you are expected to carry your rubbish with you until maybe to your hotel or to see an actual rubbish bin. You can throw your stuff out. So I would highly recommend a comfortable day bag as well. And don't get a day bag where the sling ones. Some people use the sling and they start to hurt, because this happened to me the first time. Where, you know, you just have your strap, your thin strap. That hurts after a while. What you want is something that's padded as well.
Yes. I use this Equilibrium bag. It's a big bag in comparison. Like, I think even Helmy's like, Jesus, like, that thing's massive. I would say a courier bag. I recommend this to my friends. They found some nice ones. You can find some fairly inexpensive, but if you find yourself out here without one, there's a million stores. I would say Big Camera, Yodobashi. I think even Donkey sells them. So if you find yourself here without one, after the first day, you realize you're going to need one. Because the big thing is, when you're traveling around, as you said, important other things to have: your battery bank for your phone, don't just bring one cable, bring several cables. Now, you can find other cables out here, but just to be on the safe side, have a couple extra cables and a couple of extra adapters. The two prongs out here from America are what work, so you don't need to buy an adapter if you have these. Three prongs, good luck. I found one hotel that had them. So your basic phone chargers and stuff like that will suffice out here. Those are important aspects to know. Something that's going to keep your money safe. So if your travel bag has a zip compartment inside, because you'll need your passport on you at all times, and your cash. Japan is I would say it is an exceptionally safe city. Things can happen. You know, it is, you know, the world. But, you know, you don't have to worry about pickpockets and stuff here. But still, I'm a cautious person from Los Angeles. So the way I go about it, I brought a cache of cash. I never leave it in my room. And if I had to, I have room. The rooms I have with safes, I would leave them in there. But still, just keep it on you. That travel bag is usually never leaving you. And it's one of those things. So keep your extra cash there. If you have a wallet, just budget for the day. Put your money that you're going to budget and spend for the day in there, and tell yourself, all right, if that's gone, that's all I'm spending today. Coin purse. Big out here. I didn't understand that until I got out here. The way the yen works is that there's, unlike America, there's no cent. It's the yen is just goes straight through. And in terms of bills, it starts at, I would say, the equivalent of like a $10 bill in America. And everything else, so this is a 10 yen. This is 100, so this is the standard. This is like $1. And there's two versions of these little freaking whole ones that Helmy had to explain to me. There's a 5 and a 50, and they're just different colored. So the biggest denomination, I'll have one right here, is the 500 yen. And every time you spend those bills, you're going to rack up all of this change, like just mounds of it. So have a good coin purse, or at least a coin pouch that is accessible, because these little things will rack up. And if you want to get rid of this stuff, 7-Eleven, drink machine, Gashapons! Gashapons, good way to get rid of your change, because I have found that most places, when you come back and exchange your money, no. So, and if you're going home and you got like a couple of, maybe like $5 in these. I just leave them for the hotel staff. It's a little extra thing, a little bonus. But coin purse is a must. Now, Helmy, let's talk about traveling in Japan. We touched on it earlier. And so with Tokyo, how easy is it to travel around Tokyo?
It's really easy. You just take the trains everywhere you want to go. Just use your Google Maps, and it will tell you which train station to go to, which platform you need to go to, and they will even tell you which carriage you need to wait at, so you have a better chance of getting on if it's really full or during rush time and stuff like that. You would definitely want to avoid rush time as well when people are trying to get to work. I would stay away from traveling during those times as well. And you can take the buses, but I highly recommend just sticking to the trains for now if it's your first few times. What else? Avoid taking taxis. Because they are very, very expensive.
Yes, I unfortunately had to change accommodations because, again, the reason why we're doing this, I made a rookie mistake when I swapped my first hotel for my second hotel. I had my friend staying in the Disney area, and that is in Chiba. So when I looked up Chiba hotels, I booked something in Chiba, and our mutual friend Kyle, who lives in Chiba, said, "You're staying out there?" I'm like, yeah. It's like, okay. And once I got out there, I realized why he said such a thing. Chiba's a very large area, and it's at minimum 45 minutes away from Tokyo. And I had to abandon that hotel. Otherwise, the trip with my friends was not going to work. And I lost about $500 on that. And I, much as Helmy mentioned earlier, when you're booking last second, I was looking for an APA closer, and they were upwards of $1,200 for the 8 days that I needed. So, thankfully, I found something in that exact same price range. If I was going to pay that and be close to my friends, I found in the resort area of Disney, there was a hotel just adjacent. There was a resort adjacent to the main Disney area, and for the exact same price of a teeny tiny room, I got this giant sweeping suite that had four beds in it and a balcony, because that's the thing. Some of these rooms, my room I'm in right now, perfect size. Windows will open and you can get some air. I've been in rooms, the windows do not open. So the airflow is an issue in some of these things, and those are things to watch out for. But the problem was with that hotel, it was not accessible by the train station. So thankfully, there was a tram that went that they sent to Disney, but every night we got back, couldn't make it. So I, for like six nights in a row, I was taking a taxi from there. I'll tell you this, two nights, I split a taxi with my friends. We first night was from Tokyo Tower to Tokyo Disney. That was 10,000, or yeah, that was 10,000 yen. And then the second night, we took a taxi back from Shinjuku to Tokyo. That was 8,000 yen. And if you're paying with cash, that will eat away. Now, they do take credit cards. And something with credit cards, especially on American, they will go to whatever the exchange rate is right now. Thankfully, it was a little bit my favor. So when I looked at that bill, it wasn't as hard as a bite that I was expecting. But it was still a little bit costly to get roughly about 15 to 20 miles. That Uber is not Uber out in America. It is with the taxis. And to get from Disney to my hotel via an Uber was going to be about $65. And it was only like about 8 miles away. So taxis, because the thing with the trains, they stop at midnight out here. So if you're not on a train by 11 and you can't hike it, you're either stuck or you're going to have to take a taxi. So a taxi, I would recommend, is that's DEFCON 4. That is like, I have no other option, but you're going to pay for it. And that is something to watch out for. Take the trains. If you're taking the trains, and this is something Helmy made fun of me last time because I did not know, I was paying for my every ticket, and he's just waiting, like, dude, really? I'm like, yes. And I didn't know about transfers and fare adjustments. So there's the first two times I had to do a fare adjustment, I was trying to get through the gate, and it's telling me no. So he had to come over and show me how to work the machines. When you get to the subway stations, there will be ticket machines. And they are in English in the greater Tokyo and Osaka. Like, the big cities will have them in English. But tell me, what is the easier way, if you're coming out here, to manage this?
So if you're an Apple phone, right, you mm-hmm. can download the Suica card on your phone. And you can load money into it and just use your phone to tap on and off. On and off. Mm-hmm. Or mm-hmm. you can buy the Suica card or the Pasmo. Yes. Mm-hmm. And then what I do is, because I have an Android phone, I don't mm-hmm. know if they have an Android version yet. Maybe they do, but I have the card. And in Japan, it's very popular for them to sell this thingy where you put it on this lanyard thingy where you can pull it out. So I put it, mm-hmm. I do that. So every single time at the train station, I just pull it out, tap, and, you know, just let it hang yes. loose on my bag.
So right now, I think about 2 years ago, you can get about Suica cards just about anywhere. But right now, I believe there's a shortage of the cards. So when you arrive, most likely there's one or two airports you're going to arrive to if you're coming in directly to Tokyo. It's either going to be Haneda, and if you're in Haneda, you got it good. Haneda's so close. Mm-hmm. Most likely you're going to come into Narita. And Narita is out in the sticks. It's a little bit of a hike. Thankfully, there's direct trains from Narita to everywhere you need to go in Tokyo. But the airport right now, I have found, is the only place where you can really pick up the Suica card. So when you land and get all your stuff, find one of the stations. They'll be near the subway station or the whatever train station will take you. Buy one of these things. They are rechargeable. They're good for 28 days, the physical card is. I'm running into an issue where I got 5 more days, and this card's going to expire. Thankfully, I got a friend coming in, so he's picking me up another one. But these are the lifesavers. You can recharge them at any of the subway stations. Some people will throw, like when they get here, I've talked to people, they'll put 10,000 yen on, and that'll last them pretty well, because I think an average train ride, depending where you're going, can be about 300 to 500 at times, 300 to 500 yen. The Google Maps will give you a good idea of how much you're going to pay. This is an expense that you're going to have to factor in. I would argue that have your spending money, but would you say have a budget put aside for traveling as just to get yeah, around the greater Tokyo?
100%. And keep in mind, and this is a very important tip, and this is something I learned mm-hmm. a bit later on as well, when you want to take your train rides and stuff like that, make sure mm-hmm. that you don't go for the fastest timing. The reason why I say for this, there were times when there were two options, right? There was one option that said, hey, it was going to take me 52 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. And then there was another option that was going to take me 54 minutes. There was mm-hmm. only 2 extra minutes, but the 2 extra minutes saved me $20. Mm-hmm. Because on rare occasions, you need to look at the prices, because sometimes the prices can vary by a lot, because sometimes they put you on an express train where you need to pay extra charges and stuff like that. Maybe for you, 2 minutes is worth the $10 or $20. For me, it's not worth it. I don't mind wasting 2 minutes to save $20, you know, because mm-hmm. that's money I can use towards more Godzilla stuff. So yeah. I would say whenever you want to go to any place, besides looking at the time and the number of transfers, you want to obviously have as less transfers as you can, you look mm-hmm. at the prices as well.
So I'm trying to think, what else do we need, do people need to know? Food!
Yes.
Food. What would you recommend? Well, Helmy's taking me to some awesome places. If you come out here from America, they do have the standard fast food stuff. There's McDonald's, Burger King, and Wendy's out here. I've even found a Carl's Jr. that's served American style. Those are, if you're out here like me for days on end, like I'm out here for a month, like there have been days where I'm like, I've had so much ramen and everything, like I just want something simple. Or if you're curious, I would say try McDonald's once, try KFC, because they are very different from what they are in America, taste and style-wise. Just as
And I just want to highlight the look as well. Mm-hmm. When you go to Japan, when you see a Filet-O-Fish, it looks like a Filet-O-Fish. Because I don't know about America, but in Australia, when they give you a piece of Filet-O-Fish, it doesn't look like the burger that's advertised. Sometimes the cheese is not even in the box somehow.
Yeah.
You know?
No, same in America. Same thing in America. Exact same. Yeah. The food out here is actually relatively inexpensive. I would say stay away from the resort areas if you're staying in any kind of resort. Go out in the town. What are your jams out here?
So I would say it's very, very important. There is quite a few tourist traps. These places that are tourist traps, they will charge you an arm and a leg for the food. Generally, good food, you don't even need to spend more than $20, $30 max per person, right? Mm-hmm. If you go to any place and they start charging you more than $30, unless it's a super fancy high-end restaurant, like, you know, you go to a hotel, everyone dressed in a suit and stuff like that. Outside of that, any restaurant shouldn't be charging you like $150, $200 for a simple dish. There are places, unfortunately, because of tourism and stuff like that, they realize, hey, we can capitalize on this, all this gaijin. They don't know what they're buying, and they think it's good. No. You don't need to spend more than $20-$30 for a good, really good meal. And then if you don't mind, like, or you're just like going for something decent and stuff like that, you literally can spend as cheap as $5, honestly, at a ramen store and stuff like that. I think they call it Sukiya. I can't remember what's the name of it. That one's really, really cheap. And it's pretty tasty as well. It's not fancy, but it's tasty. And then if you go to McDonald's, legit, it's $5 for a meal.
I spent when I was in Nakano, we went as we were leaving, we got lunch at this ramen joint. And the cool thing I love about out here is that their systems are so efficient. You walk up, a lot of the restaurants, if you're not sit down, you walk up, there's a machine. And again, this is where Google Translate is your friend. You just put your yen in, and then you pick the dish you want, and they'll print a little ticket. You walk in, the Maitre D will take it, you go sit down, and then 2-3 minutes later, ready to go. I think for ramen and some I got a second yakisoba dish, I think I spent 800 yen. It was very expensive. And if you're really eating on a budget, I'm telling people, everyone I've told at home, and they think I'm a whack job, but if you can eat super cheap, if you just need a snack to refill at Lawson's, 7-Eleven, or Family Mart, go to the front, and you'll see inside these cases, like, all this pre-made food. The chicken, get the chicken. It's like 209 yen, and it is the best fried chicken you'll ever have. Like, I have yet to find a mediocre dish out here. If something smells good, just walk in and give it a try. Just look at the menu, as Helmy said, because some places are tourist traps. Shibuya's got a lot of them. Shinjuku has quite a few of them. You're kind of off the beaten path. Places tend to be a little more reasonable, but even sushi out here. There's what's the restaurant you took me to? The revolving sushi place.
Oh yeah. Kura. I think it was Kura.
I think
and we went crazy. I think we had so many dishes. It was so like really good quality sushi. I think we spent, what, $30 each? And that was like a lot.
Oh, if that. I think I ate about 15, 20 dishes, and I think my tab with the exchange rate came out to like 1954 or something like that. I just realized the number I gave. And no, that's not, no connection whatsoever. It was that my friend out in Osaka took me to, I think, the sushi roll. And on less than $15, what would have been $44 in LA, I ate like a king. And the sushi is so much better out here. They don't put avocado and everything, man. Oh, there's no rolls. A lot of places do. You're in Japan. They don't do the rolls really out here. So you're going to get your actual proper sushi. But man, even the lower end places, the quality is so good. Like they take their cooking very seriously out here. But just try, like, anything you can't get at home, try it out here. The ramen is so much better. The yakisoba, all of it, steak. Oh my God, the steak. Kyle took us to this steak place I'd never known about for like $22. Like, you got this fresh cut steak that you cook on like a little grill in front of you. Best tasting steak I've ever had. And he said, yeah, this is like the low end.
Which one was this one? Is it the one that I went with you?
Yeah, the one in Shinjuku. I forgot the name, but it, the English lettering on it just says quick, fresh, tasty on it. So those are what to look for. I forgot the Japanese name, but just walk into one of those, you pay, and then they bring you the food. The only thing, look, if you're like me, the only thing that you're probably going to spend a little money on, which the Japanese do a lot of, is drinking out here. Booze is still not cheap. If you're of age and you want to have a couple of drinks, beer is, it's still not as expensive as getting one in America. But it's everywhere. Just don't be a jackass and drink on the subway. I just saw a couple of videos last night of some unfortunate foreigners who got a little too tipsy. You'll see a lot of Japanese people coming home from after work. That has been something I have been shocked by how many people are like on weekday nights are coming home just plastered. But it is a communal thing out here. So if you want to have a couple of drinks, just don't, I would say avoid Shibuya and Shinjuku. Just find some cool hole in the wall bar. Or if you and your friends are in your room, go to Lawson's because, man, you can get a tall boy of Asahi for like 250 or 60 yen. It's primo. I'm trying to think. Anything else that we need to know?
I would say, again, like, you know, if you're just trying to stay in Tokyo area and stuff like that, then you don't need to get the JR Pass. The JR Pass is only worth it if the exchange rate is in your favor. For example, for Americans right now, it's still worth it. But for anyone outside, it's not worth it anymore because they've increased the charges so much that it doesn't make economical sense anymore. But for you guys, you're lucky. You can still use it. But again, that's only if you are not, you're planning to stay, you're planning to go places that are really, really far out.
Yes. Like me this time, since I was going from Tokyo to Osaka to Fukuoka, I'm actually going to Fukushima tomorrow, the JR Pass, which is the Japan Rail Pass, that allows you to use the Shinkansen, the bullet train. If you're buying just your individual bullet train, if say you got 14 days out here, and you're like, I want to take 2 days, go to Osaka, you're going to pay upwards, even in America's standards, for a one-way ticket, it's like $180 to almost $200 for a one-way ticket. The bullet train is not cheap. Now, the Japan Rail Pass offers blocks that you can buy ahead of time. You can just Google Japan Rail Pass. There's, I think it's the first site that comes up. That's where I bought mine ahead of time. I've still paid for 14 days $530. Now, a lot of my friends said, you're nuts. But when I told them where I was going, they're like, oh, okay, you're going to get the most out of it. And the pass, which is just this little paper pass, the thing I learned with it is that you can't just walk up to the Shinkansen station and pick it up. There's a separate location. You have to go get it. And the beauty with this thing is you can go online after you create an account. And if you know you're traveling for a couple of days and I would say if your trip is more than 2 hours, you can pick your seat ahead of time. The beauty about the Shinkansens, they run similar to the trains in the city. So if you miss one train, you can always find another train about another half hour to 45 minutes later. Just know that, you know, you can make it 350 miles in under 2 hours, but there will be stops along the way. Just pay attention to those. But it does allow you to see a lot of the rest of the country. Like, I wouldn't have been able to go to Fukuoka if I didn't have it. I bought a 14-day pass. And the beauty about with this is that the way the subway system out here works, there's ones run by the local municipality, and then there's ones run by JR. This will also allow you to use those JR lines. You can't use them on all of them, but it saved me a lot of money in Osaka because a lot of the loops and stuff around there were run by JR. So you do get your money's worth. If you're traveling anywhere, I would say it's like a Disneyland pass. You have to use it about 5 times to make sure to pay for itself. So if you're out here for an extended amount of time, this is definitely worth it. Just know you're going to pay for it, but make the best use of it. The bullet train's amazing. It's, man, those things, holy crap, they haul ass. And you get to see a lot of the countryside that you wouldn't see outside of the cities. Like, it really is a beautiful ride, especially if you're going during the day. What I saw going down to Fukuoka was stunning. But there were also other times where when you pass other trains that are going about, you know, 190, 200 miles an hour, that train just, you're like, holy crap. And no one's, like, blinking an eye. The other wild thing is, speaking of drinking, man, so many people just brought food and were popping beers and just, like, having a good time just sitting back and enjoying that trip. But that is an expensive thing. If you're coming here for the first time, you're probably not going to need it. That is for, I would say, a second, third trip where you want to see the rest of the country. You theoretically can fly everywhere within like a 90-minute time, but just know you're going to have to go to an airport, go through security. The bullet train, you don't need that, but it's going to be a little longer, but it will get you to any of the major cities you need to get to. But yeah, other than that, yeah, just know, even one-way pass is still super expensive. I know some people have this idea of like, oh, it's going to be like $30. No, it's not. These are highly sophisticated trains that move at astonishing speeds. So they are quite costly. But if you get a chance to try one, I highly recommend it. They're an experience in of themselves. So especially if you want to see Kyoto and Kobe, like all those places, absolutely, I would say go and see. But if it's your first time, man, Tokyo's going to take up a lot of your time. This is what this trip for me was about, was seeing the rest of the country. Like, you know, as Helmy was telling me these grand stories, because he's been up and down his country already, and I'm like, I need to see all that. So 1 month, and I'm like, yeah, I can do a lot in there. I can fit a lot in there. Anything
and
else?
This feels to me.
Oh, so much, so much. I spent, I think, a combination of like 8 hours in Kyoto. I didn't even scratch the surface. I only got to go to 3 temples, and it still wasn't enough. Like, those are, I mean, that's the beauty about once you get outside of Tokyo and really see the rest of the country. You know, Tokyo is its own thing. It's its own entity. It is a megapolis. The rest of the cities are much more manageable. Osaka is a completely different vibe. I would compare it to, like, if Tokyo is New York, Osaka is L.A. It's a little more spacious. It's not as hectic and a lot easier to navigate. Same with Kyoto. Kyoto is beautiful. Absolutely gorgeous. Fukuoka, my goodness, it was its own wild thing. I did the Godzilla zip line. And you want to talk about buses. That was my first time using a bus out here. And that, again, yeah, it's not an easy thing. 3 buses came, mm-hmm. And I kept asking, are you going? They're like, no. You got to wait for this one. So those are things to take in. I know a lot of people, they want to do it all. And the thing is, case in point, the Godzilla zipline. I was in Osaka. I know it's near Osaka. I had in my head it was like a 40-minute train ride at most. No, it is not. My friends out there were like, dude, it's like 2 hours to get out there by standard train. Thankfully, I had the Shinkansen that got me to Kobe pretty quick. But even from Kobe, it was 2 trains and a bus to still get out there because you're on an island. Like, there's no way to physically walk there. You have to get off one train, get on another train, get on another train. Then you're at this bridge. And you go over you have to wait for this bus to take over the bridge. And once you're there, it's awesome. But then getting off that island is a whole nother experience in of itself. And some people I've talked to, I don't know if you had this experience, but were you there at night?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the tram stopped running, right?
I don't know. Thankfully, I still had the train. I don't know. Okay. The bus.
Okay. They have the little bus that took you to the stop? Or did you have to hike to the bus stop?
I didn't have to hike, thankfully, but it literally was the last bus.
Oh, okay. Yes. So that's something that I had friends that missed that last tram. It is like a 30-minute hike to the nearest bus stop. And these are things that you don't realize once until you get there that you're like, oh, okay, this is what people are we're talking about. Similar, but not as bad, of going out to Siobhan. If you, I would recommend if you come out, make the trek out to Siobhan to go to the Godzilla ride. It's fairly inexpensive. It's a little theme park. It's very Knott's Berry Farm-ish for those here in America. It's weekday. It's old, but do what?
Do it on a weekday.
Weekday, 1,000%. Last year we went on a Tuesday. Zero, like no wait time whatsoever. My buddy had an aneurysm. He's like, I've never seen it that. I've never seen that ever. Like we walked on seven times. Like the every time we got after the third time, the ride operator is like, okay, I already did the whole thing. Just go on in. But it's like $30 American to get in. The Ultraman ride is in the beginning of the day, runs till about 12:31, and then after about 2 o'clock till closing, the Godzilla ride goes. It is so worth it. It's a little out of the way. It's like four trains, and you can get lost. So be very astute to where you're going. But definitely worth the trip because that ride is amazing. The rest of the park, I don't think there's going to be much for adults to do. It's cool to walk around, but all the other rides are these little Astro Boy kiddie rides that no one's going to be able to fit on. But the Godzilla ride, mwah, so worth it. Shopping-wise, Sunshine City, that's a definite. Any other like big shopping destinations outside of Nakano or all that?
Ginza, that's where your shopping district is at. So a lot of the boutique or high-end fashion stuff is there. It's still cool to walk around and check it out. And obviously, I think the biggest Uniqlo is there as well. So that'll be fun to check out.
And also Godzilla Attack there.
Yeah. Let me see. Dude, there's so many things to do in Tokyo in that 7 days, you'll be fine. And here's the thing. But the first time, just to give context, the first time I ever went, I think I told you this, Chris, the first time I ever went to Japan, and I just stayed mainly in Tokyo itself, I literally spent, in terms of US dollars, $1,000. My whole trip, which is including my flights, my accommodation. Again, I was staying in hostels, so it's really, really cheap. And I was eating literally ramen because, you know, I just wanted to save money. I just wanted to get my ass there the first time. So even then, I still had a bit of shopping money for, you know, some of the figures I wanted to buy. And I still had money for tourist attractions and stuff like that. So literally, if you were being a super tight ass, $1,000 might even be possible. I wouldn't recommend it. I would say at the minimum, have $2,000.
Yes.
But again, $2,000 to go there. Like, for example, if you plan it from now to then, like what, Godzilla 75th birthday, right? That's essentially what, 5 years from now? Dude.
Yes.
I guarantee you can save $2,000 in 5 years, right?
It's very much so. I would even say if you were to start, say you wanted to come next year for the celebration, if you start now, if you can get about 800 put together, you can relatively book a flight by March or April. And then, you're just figure, I would say if you're going to be out here for like 10 days, put an extra $300 aside for travel expenses. That's for train use. And you probably won't even use all that. After that, then just put the money away for your whatever you're going to spend. And, you know, the exchange rate is great right now. We don't know what it'll be in 6 months from now, but you can I've been budgeting myself to 10,000 yen a day. That is roughly $64 American at the exchange right now, but that's in Japanese terms $100 a day. That has been more than enough for me. And in 10 days, like at $1,000 just to see things, eat, like you can do that on that and still have the full experience. The beauty is once you're here, things are relatively inexpensive and it's very doable. And that's why I wanted to do this episode, to really show people like, yes, getting there is going to be the biggest hurdle. But once you're here, you can do so much, see so much, and really almost spend next to nothing. Just know that there are certain rules, and just follow those rules, and you'll be good. You know, just don't be a jackass. I think that's the biggest one. You know, don't be an ugly American. Yeah,
don't tip. Right?
Yes.
Some of them will be offended when you try to tip, because I don't tip, because I know, and I've seen attempts of an American trying to tip, and you can see the person literally getting offended.
Yes. I just actually had this conversation with my friend Larry about the tipping culture coming over here to America. And look, they don't do tip. It turns out most of the world doesn't tip. You know, we're big on tipping. You'll want to tip, but don't. It's not. Think of it this way. It's like releasing a goldfish into a pond. Like, it's not part of it. And you're changing the ecosystem. It's not something that you want to do, because it does affect the people who live here. And their day-to-day, because if, you know, it's like feeding the bears. If they become accustomed to that, they're not going to have any survival instincts. You start tipping, and you make it harder for the people who are actually have to live here day-to-day, because now those people have to compete with you, the tourists who are coming here and throwing your money around willy-nilly. So don't tip. Just know in Japan, if you're riding the escalator, if you're not going to walk up it, it's on the left side.
Tokyo is left side, Osaka is right side.
It was right side, yes. That threw me off, but yes. Just follow that. Just know if you're on a subway, old people, pregnant women, families, give up your seat. That's the thing I love about out here, is that there are some of those more chivalrous values that are still in play, and I appreciate, like, a lot of times, like, if the train's wide open, I'll sit. But, you know, even today, I gave up my seat several times for, you know, some older gentlemen, a nice elderly woman, and a family. As I was coming back from Yokohama proper to where I am in Shin Yokohama, there was his mother and her son. He was like 3, got up, gave them the seat. If you do those things, everyone is, everyone's polite, nice about it. Just know, don't blast your phone on the train. That's a faux pas out here that I've seen some people do. Don't talk on the phone.
Don't talk on the phone. And if you have a backpack or whatever, you should bring it to your friend.
Yes, hold it. Don't use the next seat, because those trains fill up very quick. And if you're able-bodied, just stand. You know, I know it's nice to sit after, you know, walking around all day, but be courteous. That is what makes this country go around, is there is a common courtesy amongst the people here. If you follow those rules, you'll have a great time. The people here are super friendly. They're exceptionally nice. And if you're worried about the language barrier, if you're in Tokyo, a lot of people here speak conversational English. Like, you're not going to be able to get, like, the little idioms and stuff, but most people can help you with certain things. And if worse comes to worse, Google Translate. I've had many conversations through Google Translate, but most people can help you. Tell me any little phrases that I, you know, arigato, big thing, I say everything. Anything else just to tell people?
Arigato gozaimasu means thank you very much. Sumimasen, it's like, you know, excuse me. Gomenasai is kind of like, I'm sorry, and stuff like that. But generally, you know, like, people just say, oh, thank you, or like, excuse me. And then when, you know, you want to try to get your way, even though there's a bit of space, it's still nice for you to say, oh, sumimasen, so you can make your way through a corridor that's kind of packed or whatever.
And then, yeah, just there's a line, didn't it? You know, when you're walking through, you'll see there's a ebb and flow. There's a north and a south. And just kind of stay the lanes. You can't do it every time, but it's well worth it. Yeah.
And another question they always like to ask, they say so quickly, you kind of miss it. Whenever you're at convenience stores or at general stores even, they'll be like, do you want a bag? The first question they almost always ask is, do you want a bag? So it's you'll be so close. What are they saying? Because it'll be in Japanese.
Yeah.
Just say, if you want a bag, just not yes, or they say no or whatever. But I guarantee you 90% of the time they're asking you, do you want a bag?
Yeah. Bags are like 5 yen out here. So if you have your travel bag, you half the time you don't need it. So, all right, we're going to start wrapping this up. But one thing I want to ask, Helmi, your last trip out here, you're out here for Godzilla Day. Did you have fun?
100%. 1,000%.
Mm-hmm. How was it watching?
It's this vibe that you get, you know, hanging out with all these Godzilla fans, even though they may be Japanese, they don't speak the language, but the excitement that was there. And here's the thing, I guarantee you, at least the past few years, since I've been going there, I've been seeing a lot more, as they call it, gaijin, which is like foreigners and stuff like that. So it's like, and every single person I've met has been really friendly and nice to talk to. So it's like, you know, if you see someone kind of foreign looking and you feel a bit out of place at this event, you could just say hi and say, hey, are you here for Godzilla Fest as well? And more often than not, they are. And it's really nice to make new friends and stuff like that. And I had a blast. I had a blast.
What did you think of that short film?
You mean the live action suit one?
Yes.
I freaking loved it. I lost my bit quite a few times. Although I'll be honest. Mm-hmm. I think I kind of prefer the one last year a little bit more.
Yeah.
But I still had a lot of fun. And when, you know, to see the crowd reactions, you know, that was a big part of the fun as well. So I really loved it. I'm glad they're releasing it on Blu-ray, all the parts. So I'm definitely going to get that one as well.
All right. And then what was your big buy this time? Because last time I was out, this guy walked away with so much. I know you walked away with something.
But here's the thing. I was a very good kid this time around. I don't think I bought anything super expensive. Most of the stuff with the t-shirts and stuff like that, I didn't even get any collectibles. I did get a couple of the Godzilla bowls, you know, the one where, you know, bowl, and then on top of it, there's a Godzilla figure. Godzilla chopsticks, Godzilla, I think, dishware and stuff like that. So, thankfully, I didn't buy anything too expensive this time around.
All right. Well, it's not like you asked me, when's the next time you're coming back out? So, I know you'll be back out in probably another 6 months or so, right?
I'll be honest, this next year might be the first year where I don't know when I'm going to Japan again. I know I will. I just don't know when, right?
Wow.
Mainly because I got a lot of traveling I'm planning to do next year. I'm planning, obviously, to go to Texas. I'll be seeing you in Texas. I'll be going to, obviously, G-Fest, Chicago. My parents really want to go to the Grand Canyon, so I'll be checking that one out. Los Angeles, obviously, L.A., Las Vegas. High chance of me going to Kentucky again, and obviously Singapore, potentially Taiwan. So a bit of traveling. So I don't know if I'll be going to Godzilla Japan again. But the chances are I'll be going for Godzilla 71st because, you know, we are fun to have that celebration again. Maybe if I don't go to Taiwan, I might go for a few days in April to Japan. How about you? When's your next year? Because I know this is not it.
No, because even with as much as I've seen, I'm not going to be able to get to northern Japan, which has been one of my goals. I am moving to Texas for the next year once I come back. So I will probably skip the celebration next year unless things open up. I will be at G-Fest, though. But we do know that there is a new movie coming, and most likely it will be not 2025, but it'll probably be 2026. So that is when I'm realistically looking at coming back for maybe a two-week jaunt. If I'm doing anything on 10 hours on a plane, I got to do more than a week here to really make it worth my time. So that next trip,
I have a question for you. Yes. You know, when it comes to Japanese movies, the turnaround time can be really, really quick. What if it comes out next year? Are you going to make the track?
If it comes out next year, I will. Then I might break my rule of coming out for less than a week. But I don't foresee it coming out that quick. Knowing Yamazaki, he's going to take his time. And I think Toho has learned a lesson of let's not do what we did in the 90s and early 2000s and just crank these things out. We don't know what Yamazaki has. We don't even know if it's an actual sequel to Minus One. This might be something completely new. My hope against hope is that he's going to do a proper Versus movie. Because if you've seen The Ride, he can do that with the work, the effects he has at his disposal. It's a matter of what does he have cooked up, but I will happily come out for that movie. I doubt it's going to be next November. Most likely it'll be November 2026. That is when I will realistically plot to come back and then see Sapporo and Hokkaido and all that fun stuff that I have yet to really get.
Plus, you still need to check out Sakaminato, man. That's where all the yokai stuff is at, you know?
I know. Even, you know, I thought I had plenty of time with the 8 days in Osaka, and it turns out, no. You know, thankfully, my shout-out to my friends Kazuki and Larry out there. They showed me a really good time. Shout-out to Frank for showing me around Fukuoka. But I blinked, and before I knew it, I was out of Osaka already. I'm like, I can't believe that 8 days went by just like that. That is the thing when you're out here, like, you know, that first trip was a blur. It's still a blur to me because I was so sleep deprived. And here's a little, I've told this to people, this is, we'll wrap this up with this. So I think it was the second day you and I went out. Oh no, it was the first day because we did the Fist of the North Star exhibit. So first thing I properly ate in Japan after, you know, outside of snacking on some popcorn and stuff was the yakisoba we had there overlooking, you know, Tokyo, which was a beautiful thing. Then we did Nakano. Had a burger there to just a snack and carb load. Then you took me to this, I'm going to try to get out there while I'm back in Tokyo proper, this fish place. That was in Roppongi. That, oh my god! I still wake up thinking about it. Delicious. Then we went to Akihabara, and in Akihabara, you took me to this little off the beaten path restaurant. What was the dish that they served there? It was the egg dish.
It's a lot of the egg dishes and stuff like that. Yeah,
I forgot the name, but it was like the first American like size dish I saw.
Okay.
By the time I got back to my room, Roppongi, it was like quarter to midnight. I sat down on my bed. My feet were like swollen. Everything was aching. I popped a couple of Tylenol. And then 20 minutes later, I'm like, I ate like 4 or 5 times today. Why am I starving? And I messaged you, and all you did was reply back with a laugh emoji. And then you sent me a screenshot of your Fitbit that tracked, and you basically says like, bro, we walked roughly like 15 miles today. Like, I'm like, holy crap, I can't believe we did it. And a lot of those, when you're in Akihabara, like a lot of those buildings are very tight and the steps are very steep. There was a bar you took me to, I think it was the 8-bit bar, where I told him, like, look, man, if I have a heart attack, because this is like 4 floors up, there was the elevator, I think, to get there was a coffin. I'm like, I am not doing that.
No, that was not the one. That one did not even have an elevator. Your only way out.
Oh, yes. It's the stairs, that one. Yeah, no, I think it was that Super Potato, the game store you took me to. Yeah, that one had a coffin of an elevator. So very steep steps, and I am, you know, and I, at that point, was like almost like 50, 60 pounds heavier than I am now. And I felt like in Ghostbusters when they have to hike up. Like, what floor are we at? Like, 30th. All right, tell me when we're going to get to the 70th because I'm going to puke. Like, that is how much I expended that day. And when you showed me how far we walked, I'm like, I can't believe I just did that. No wonder I'm starving because I burned off so many calories. And that is a thing I did not expect out here. And that's why we're doing this episode, because I want people to come. I want people to have a good time. Helmy has... I've seen him at G-Fest, like, people who've never, he's like, bro, you gotta go. You gotta get there. You have, this is the promised land. And it truly is. Japan is so beautiful. Outside of the kaiju stuff, one of the best places in the world to come visit. And there's nothing else like it. So, On that note, we'll wrap it up because we are pushing 2 hours. Oh, my God. So I got to let Helmy go. It's getting pretty late where he's at. So yeah. On that note, everybody, if you like what you see, remember I don't have to give you that spiel. You can find us on social media. We're on X at the Kaiju Kingdom. We're on Instagram at the Kaiju Kingdom and Facebook.com/the Kaiju Kingdom Podcast. You can follow all of our misadventures while we're out here. I'm out here for another week. So I got Tokyo in like 4 days. I'm going to the Super Raya Museum tomorrow. So I'm going to go do it. Yep. Two-hour train ride.
Hang on. Super Raya Museum and the, what's that?
The street, right? Yes, I'm doing. I'm going to do both.
The warehouse, you know where they keep all the props?
Yeah, I'm doing both.
Okay.
That one actually might just pay for a taxi to get me from the train station to there. I might fork out the money on that one.
Okay, I'll give you some tips. I'll send you some.
Sounds good. So follow for that. I've also shot about I've got about 90 gig almost of footage and video I've still not posted yet. So keep tabs here on this channel and on our social media for a lot of that. I've been putting up as much as I can. So. On that note, that will do it for this edition of the Kaiju Kingdom Podcast. I want to thank Helmy for coming on, giving those tips. And on that note, thanks for watching, guys. And we'll see you next time.